He's got a seed to sow, and Rufus has been doing that. And Gerald, boy, Gerald is the seed sower of all time. Our buddy Tom Campbell said he's had a lot going on recently, and so he's just gotten around to his tomato seeds. He gonna be all right there.
He's gonna be a little late, but he's still if he's got a chance.
Yeah,
for me, most tomato seeds. On a heat mat, in a greenhouse, perfect temperature, humidity, all that, takes 30 days for the seed to get big enough and enough root for me to move it to a 4.5-inch pot.
Well, I started too early, Gerald. I did about 1st January. Should have known better. Now I've got a 1.5-foot tall plant.
Yeah.
Sort of spindly. Mm-hmm. I need to calm them down a little bit.
Put them outside some. Like today.
Four or five hours,
put them outside in some of this 70, 65-degree weather and bring them back in at night, and you'll tough
them
up.
Yep. Amen.
You have gone to Merritt's sometime in the last few months, haven't you?
I certainly have.
That's what did it for you.
I have a Merritt T-shirt you gave me.
Does it fit all right?
Oh, absolutely.
So if you get the fever, then you go to Merritt's and then you'll have a BLT and then that's what made him do that in January. He had gone to Merritt's at some point I got to have a tomato. But there are a lot of other things. You were talking off the air about dahlias.
Yeah, I'm growing. My daughter has twisted my arm to make me grow the sign beds at her subdivision. And I was looking something a little different to put in them this year. And I had an opportunity to get this new dahlia cutting. And the dahlias, it's more mounded, and they don't get but 16 to 18 inches tall. And it's supposed to be a all-summer bloomer where, a lot of your dahlias really don't kick in until the end of summer, in the fall. So I'm going to give it a try this year. I've already potted them up and got them growing. And
I want to make a request to be on your favorite list of your friends.
For dahlias?
I think it's Venti Pink Burst. It's a pink. It has a darker pink center on it. It's a very attractive-looking bloom, at least what I can tell on it from the picture of them. But I'm going to give that a little whirl this year to try to do a little something different there.
I remember Mama grew dahlias for the church, and they'd be so tall they had to be staked.
Oh yeah.
I've seen some 5-6 feet tall in the mountains because they grow so quickly in this growing season.
Three or four years, I grew some in the planters behind the chancellor's house at NC State, and I was trying to use some that didn't get quite as big, but then I wanted some with those gigantic blooms, and all of those with the gigantic blooms get pretty tall. And if you don't support them, then it's been all over.
Man, and people are looking at their lawns. The fescue was affected some by the cold weather.
Yes, it was
this year, but it's starting to green up.
Yep, and if you hadn't done your after the first of the year fertilization, hurry up and do it. You really should have done it two or three weeks ago, but it's still not too late. People don't realize you do not fertilize fescue during warm spring and summer weather because it promotes too much growth, and that newer growth is way easier to get the brown patch in it. So that's part of the reason that you don't, or the biggest reason why you don't do that. And it's time to, you still could get in a round of pre-emergence on any of your grass, in particular the Bermuda. Not quite time. I like to see my Bermuda or Zoysia showing a little green before I throw the fertilizer to them. But if we have many more of these 80-degree days, you'll start to see.
Not too late for crabgrass pre-emergence, right?
No, not too late, but you need to hurry up. Need to hurry up.
And again, if you put that out, you can't put out grass seed.
Don't be planting a seed with it.
No, because it don't discriminate. I mean, typically what they have found, and I have been to I don't know how many of the turf field days, where if you figure up how much pre-emergence you need for your size yard, just say it was supposed to be 100 pounds to do your lawn, they have said split it and put 50 pounds, you know, second or third week in February, wait 30 days, second or third week in March, and put the cyclid application. They have found that our weather is so unpredictable from year to year that the soil temperatures heat up at various times and different weed seed germinate different temperatures. If you do that, you've got a better chance of getting the best possible control. So this would be getting close to that cyclid application. Well, your first application is better than no application at all.
Now, it used to be you did it in February, and then you waited again until June.
No,
didn't it?
It depends on which grass. It's typically due again in 30 days, and most of your weed germination, if you're going to kill it, you've got to get that done in February, March, and April. Generally speaking, I don't know of anywhere you put pre-emergence out end of August to September for fall weeds.
Right. Okay.
Out of that. And that's I almost never do, because if you've got fescue, you're having to reseed it every fall.
Yeah.
So that's not a good plan. And most of the time with the Bermuda, the thicker stand of Bermuda or Zoysia or centipede you have, the fewer weeds you're going to have in it. So that may not require you to be as diligent on trying to get a winter weed preventer put out. And if you overseed with rye on your Bermuda, once again, you can't put out that, you know, fall trying to prevent the weed, because it'll keep everything from coming up.
We have over the years often been asked what warm season grass can deal with the least amount of sunlight.
None. Well, I take that back. If the St. Augustine is your best shot, if you've got not, you know, more than 6 hours of sun. There used to be years ago at Cameron Village that used to be that the little strip between the sidewalk and the trees was St. Augustine, and those trees were pretty good. You know, they were touching then, so there was not a lot. I mean, couldn't have been 3 or 4 hours of sun touching that grass a day, and I thought it looked pretty good. But if you're, you know, if you've got heavy shade and you're not getting hardly any sun at all, I think you're wasting.
It's hard to grow fescue that.
You're wasting your time.
Yeah, ground covers and
season.
Things like that are going to be a little more cost effective and reliable, I think. But some of the zoysias, maybe it's just a sales pitch saying that they can maybe take 6 hours or a little less.
And you're getting at it depends on your definition of a little less. I mean, you know, they'll tell you a little less because they can get by with 7 instead of 8. But that's still a lot of sun.
It is a lot of sun.
I do know that's important in the golf industry, because lots of the tee boxes tend to be stuck back in kind of a wooded area, and they're looking so. And I still, you know, NC State years ago brought back seed from Africa that was growing under some gigantic, I don't think it was a live oak, but it was a tree like that, a huge evergreen tree in like pure shade, and it was just thriving.
And that was a Bermuda.
A Bermuda. And they've been, I don't know to what where they're at, but they've been working on trying to get a more shade tolerant Bermuda out of that, and I'll have to touch base with somebody out there.
Yeah, that would be
in the breeding department,
because revolutionary.
Yes, if you got that. So I'm thinking that there's it must not have panned out as well as they thought, because you'd be hearing something about,
sure,
hey, we're getting close to, and maybe being able to do that.
And then there are the army worms we had last year.
Yes.
That destroyed a lot of lawns.
Yes.
That was an anomaly, I assume. I think it was after a hurricane.
I hope this colder winter has done something about that.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Well, I never have understood why people are so crazy about growing grass in the shade when there's so many wonderful ground covers.
Yeah. There are a lot of plants.
Less maintenance. You get a little bloom on some of them.
Hellebore, hellebore, hellebore.
Oh, good Lord. Woo.
Yeah, I was out at my son's house the other day, and they had planted some hellebores from our yard, which was from your yard.
Oh, gosh.
But I think they also planted some of the – they may have planted some of the sterile ones,
mm-hmm,
too, because they have a little more color. But they want them to spread. I said, they'll do it.
They will take over. I've had to dig out of the garden and other things. But I have literally thousands and thousands. But I love them. I've never seen such a beautiful crop in my life.
So one important thing to remember about the hellebores, if you're wanting it to spread and colonize and give you a bunch of babies so you can transfer around, be careful how you mulch around them. So the hellebores are blooming now.
Right.
A lot of them.
Beautiful. They
look
great
this year. Drops those little black seed, a little smaller than a BB. They don't pop up till September.
Right.
Or so. And if you come back in the fall and or in the summer and put a heavy layer of mulch on, mm-hmm, you will choke every one of those out before they come up. Because they will pop up and sit there for a year, and you're like, what in the world is that? It don't look nothing like a hellebore plant. And after a year, it'll take off growing. And then, I got a baby. But if you do some research online, what do the hellebore seedlings look like? Because they got kind of little round leaves. They don't look nothing like the plant. And I don't know how many people they didn't have a sterile variety. They just kept choking them out every year when they mulched. And that's one thing to keep in mind. If you're wanting to have more, and another thing to keep in mind, if you don't want to have more.
Dig them and give them away. Somebody that needs something to spread.
Yeah. And, it's the next time we go to S&T's, Rufus, we got to bring a couple of your plants.
I got it potted already.
All right. For a gentleman and his wife who live in Pittsburgh and who are big fans of yours. And so we got to do that. We need to make plans to do that. I'm for S&T's and the gambler there. That's the way I am. The way you are about tomatoes, the same thing. I love eating there, no matter what it is. But it's usually the gambler.
It's great.
Yeah, it's good stuff. All right, Gerald Adams with us, Brother Rufus, of course, on the WPTF Weekend Gardener. More coming up here on WPTF. Back. It's 9:23. Now you're listening to the Weekend Gardener, and we got some weather coming through tomorrow. It's that frontal edge of it is getting into our most western part of North Carolina right now, and I know that it's been pretty rough on some of the states preceding. Missouri had some real problems out there. It's going through Nashville and some of those other areas that have a tendency to find tornadoes in their path. So we'll see. By the time it gets to us, hopefully it hitting those mountains will take some of the starch out of it. You know, it's time, really a great time of year when spring is in the air and critters are invading the garden, right? Taking preventative measures early in the season is a wise approach, and now is a time to start protecting your garden with I Must Garden. I Must Garden has repellents to protect your plants from deer and rabbits, rid of moles and voles from your lawn, stop squirrels from digging in flower pots, repel snakes, Rufus, from your patio. You need to start checking your patio. And keep your neighbor's dogs and cats from digging in the garden. Now, I Must Garden repellents are formulated with natural ingredients, carefully selected to deter pests without harming your plants or the environment. No harsh chemicals, just pure effective protection. Applying I Must Garden repellents is a breeze. Simply spray and watch your garden flourish. Plus, the long-lasting formulas mean fewer applications, and that saves you time, ensures continuous protection. You'll find I Must Garden repellents all over the Triangle, including Fifth Season Gardening and Atlantic Avenue Garden Center in Raleigh. Protect your garden today with I Must Garden repellents. People, pet, and eco-friendly. I Must Garden, your ultimate defense against garden pests.
I can attest to it about squirrels on tomatoes. The little stinkers, when you get one about the size of a golf ball, they'd come and just wreck it. And I sprinkle some I Must Garden pellets around in the pot at the base of the plant. Stopped them.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's what it's supposed to do. Yeah.
First-hand testimony.
And it doesn't smell bad. Mm-hmm. It smells great. It's got all those herbs and spices in them.
How about a Cliff Joyner?
Brother Cliff, yes, go ahead.
I had rather have questions that can't be answered than answers that can't be questioned. All right. Now you got
well,
that.
Well, that'll make you, that's
head spin.
That's good for old people that are worried about losing their mind.
That's one for Richard.
You got to think about one from Richard, huh?
Yeah, that's
King Richard or?
Our Richard that would love that one.
Yeah, he certainly would. I mean, that one's kind of make you think.
Yeah.
Well, these brain teasers that they tell you to, as you're getting older, to look at.
Mine's overloaded now.
Yeah,
brain,
that's right.
That is.
I was just, I talked about I Must Garden products and all the herbs and spices. You're growing all those herbs. That must really smell good out there in those greenhouses.
It's high smelling, especially when you're potting them up or when you're touching and moving the trays around. You just brush against the leaves and,
Yeah. So what are some of them that you're growing? You mentioned one early in the show.
I will be growing
that pineapple sage, I think.
Yeah, I'll have some many different kinds. I think I'm going to have about 10 different kinds of basil. I'm going to have a bunch of mint, chocolate mint.
Mm-hmm.
I will
chocolate
have
mint.
Yeah. Pineapple mint, apple mint.
Now, how close, if you get up real close to that chocolate mint, is there a hint of chocolate?
I hadn't wanted to bite into it yet, and I'm a chocolate Hershey lover from way back.
Does it smell like a Hershey bar?
It smells like the chocolate mint ice cream that you get.
Oh,
that's why. Is what it smells like.
Well, you going to grow some government?
No.
That'll weep.
No.
That'll weep right fast.
I'm going to have phenomenal lavender, which to my notion is the best lavender. You know, many of the English lavenders are great. You plant them here, and when August rolls around, the plant says, "You didn't tell me it was going to be this hot and humid." Bye. You know, they just melt on you. But this is the one that can take the heat here, and about the only one I've ever really had a lot of success with growing. So I'm excited that I'm going to have, when I thought I'm going to do this, I said, I got to have that particular lavender.
Well, I just pulled up about a 20-year-old rosemary that had grown up about 4 feet tall, and something just got it. Yeah. I suspect voles.
Could be.
Well, if she's leaning over, it's probably a vole, going after those roots. After all these years.
Yeah.
A friend of mine just texted me, "I want some of that chocolate mint."
Yeah, we probably shouldn't have mentioned that.
Well, no, I'm excited.
Did you grow enough?
Probably not, because that's the only danger this year. I've kind of figured out with the tomatoes, peppers, eggplant, all the stuff, what's you know, how much to grow of each one. But I don't have a clue which herbs are going to sell the best or how much. It's nothing but a crapshoot. So I'm sure there are going to be some herb things. I'm like, God, I wish I'd planted twice as much.
Well, you need a Gerald and Henry's analytics yeah. department.
Well, you're looking at the analytics right here, and these, you know, I need some new chips or something because this computer's overloaded.
Yeah. All right. Well, good luck with that.
Yeah.
The chocolate mint. And the lavender. All right, we're gonna take. But I tell you, this show is going really too fast. We got to slow down a little bit. Get your foot off the accelerator, Rufus.
Good Lord.
Yeah.
9:29.
More of the Weekend Gardener coming up here on WPTF. You're going to ask Shirley what? How to get? We're going to be at the Habitat Restore next week, and so North Raleigh Boulevard, and we look forward to that. We always have a good time at the Habitat Restore. You've been with us before, mm-hmm. haven't you, Gerald?
Mm-hmm.
Those are just such great stores. You can find so many wonderful things, and
you can get a deal.
You can get a deal, and plus a lot of companies will. We'll give furniture, brand new furniture. They'll contribute furniture. Maybe they're getting rid of some office furniture, for instance. Just all kinds of everything you can think of. Just about they have there. It's just a splendid place to shop and to meet. We're the last one. We were out there in Clayton, which is a brand new one, and it's outside of Clayton. But it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I got a fabulous side table that Phil bought me.
That's right.
I admired it.
That was very ornate.
Yeah.
Did you put it beside your chair?
It's right beside my lounge. It's got all sorts of things on it. It's a junk table now, but it's beautiful.
Now, off the air, we were discussing, you said you had grown a lot of mint, including cat mint and catnip.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And Rufus was thinking about the catnip. You've never tried any?
No, never tried any.
Never. I was mentioning off the air when I had two cats at the same time. One would just wallow in it and roll all over the place, and the other would sit there very near the other one, and he'd kind of stare at it a minute, stare at a leaf, and then he'd start eating it. So yeah. They all had it affects everybody differently. The good Lord only knows how it would affect you, Rufus, if you tried some. I think I may have it hadn't come up yet, but when some comes up in my pot, I still have some.
Well, what about
the pot,
I've heard of catnip tea, or maybe I'm thinking
maybe
that.
It's cat mint tea. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just mint.
But always amazed me that dogs just walk by and don't even notice it. Yeah. Why do cats get?
I don't know what it is about it. Cats
into drunkenness.
You can't trust them anyway. If you asked them how it affected them, they wouldn't tell you the truth.
I got a sign around the house that says "Mind the Cat," MIND.
Well, you used to have cats and dogs at the same time.
Oh yeah,
and everybody would follow Rufus.
Yeah. They'd follow me down to get the paper. One named Jacob. The fine cat, and he walked back up one time and got that terrible cat disease and died right in front of my eyes.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah.
Oh, I'm really sorry about that. Yeah, cats are a lot of fun. Cats and dogs are just a lot of fun, especially when you have them and they like each other, and you know, they get along.
Yeah,
lick each other.
That's sometimes a hard thing to do.
Yeah. They usually have to grow up, but it just depends on the animals. But that's nice. They're great to have around. And, of course, we want to be cognizant, and I'm sure you have always been cognizant of what we plant. And I was working on an article about Pieris, and Pieris is very poisonous. And They're blooming right now. Very pretty. There's one on my walking route. I mean, it's right beside the sidewalk. And I was thinking about all the kids that walk by and those flowers that are hanging off. And I would I have the tendency. I think adults would have the tendency. I'd like to pull one of those off. And, because they're so interesting looking, but you have to be careful in the plant world, especially for your pets and for your youngins about what you might plant. But you just never know what's invasive. We were talking about invasive yesterday at my son's house, and I said, well, that plant's not invasive, but these hellebores can be.
Yeah.
But in a good way. I you know, some people don't like them, but... they don't have a sense.
They must not have a lot of shade if you don't like them, because you can't convince me there's a better perennial for shade than the hellebore.
Right.
Won't touch them.
No.
I mean, that's a great sales pitch right there, but there are a lot of plants. It's not just a cuba. That used to be all that we would have for dry shade, as it were. And, you know, if you get under a bunch of trees, a lot of times it's pretty dry. There's a lot of root competition. But there are a lot of plants now. Shade gardening is really the thing. You can make your shady yard very good. A lot of understory trees and so forth. So,
good fern.
Ferns, yeah. I mean, it looks exotic when you got ferns growing all over the place. And that they usually like moisture. That's a good place. Now, the Pieris likes... like some plants like moist soil, but they like good drainage.
Right.
So that's not easy to achieve. How do you achieve that, Gerald?
Well, sometimes maybe you need to plant it somewhere and use permateal or something to get it up where the water can pour through it. But you might could plant it over if you had French drains somewhere or another that went down with the water. But usually that requires you to, you know, somewhere there's going to probably be a wee bit of shade, because out in the hot sun, it's
right,
hard to keep
right.
it.
Right, that'll dry things up very quickly. It's just interesting the problems that we're faced with nature. That
yes.
She's challenging us all the time. More of the Weekend Gardener coming up here on WPTF. It's 9:39. All right, we're back. 9:43. And the St. Patrick's Day Parade. Rufus, you enjoy that parade? Does it go down... the street past your building?
Well, it used to. Now they're on Salisbury, and I think they're having it right now as we speak.
Yeah, I'm glad they have a good time. Everybody, be easy though.
They have one of the people that works with Phil Dan, and does the flower show at the
right
garden. He's big in the St. Patrick's Day parade.
Right.
So,
well, there are some of the Raleighs. Most of us settled in. Southwest England, but there's a group that went to Ireland. I think I'm part of them. And when we were in Ireland, the people who were in charge of the tour called us Mr. and Mrs. Rawley.
Mm-hmm. Is that the Railey?
I'm told by an historian, Tom Kearney, who talked to an historian at State, that Sir Walter Raleigh never spelled his name R-A-L-E-I-G-H.
Oh, my.
He spelled it R-A-L-E-Y, but he spelled it in a lot of different ways, Old English and stuff, but I may have misinterpreted that. But he did spell it R-A-L-E-Y.
Oh, well, that's a good name.
I don't think there are any O'Reillys. Rather, O'Reillys, but no O'Reillys. So, Farmer John's with us. Farmer John, how you doing today? We're going to talk to Billy from the State Farmers Market coming up, by the way.
Hey, good morning, everybody.
Yeah.
How y'all doing?
All right, John, what's going on?
Hope y'all are.
Yes, sir.
Listen, I just down here in Fuquay Arena, and I got some stuff I got to work on here.
All right.
I want to get your thoughts and opinions. I got two issues to bring to the table. One is a black spot infestation I've got going on and how I'm proposing to deal with that. I want to get full feedback. And then just a quick question about a drip irrigation system I want to put in also. So back to the black spot issue. We've got some.
Are these on what? Do you have the black spot on?
Well, that's what I was about to tell you. So the builder, been in here 2 years, the builder had installed a very nice tree-form inspiration magnolia. Gerald, I'm sure you're familiar with that. It's not your southern magnolia. It's a much smaller leafed kind of plant and shaped in a tree form. It's a really lovely plant. It's got it all over it. Encore Zay is planted under that magnolia. They've got it.
Ooh.
But also around to the back, last year we planted some smaller variety tea olives. I think they're called Pearls of Buddha's Head. Who comes up with the name?
I don't know.
Pearls on Buddha's Head tea olive. They're about a 4 to 6 foot variety. They've got it. And then we also had planted some Shades of Pink Viburnum, again, a smaller variety of Viburnum, and one of the three has got it, not seeing it on the other three. But here's my thought about it. So I've tried spraying with a spray, mixing up neem oil and spraying with a tank sprayer. I've done that two or three times without a great deal of success. So I went looking for additional information, found some videos that talk about a neem oil drench. And the idea is you're mixing the neem oil up into a bucket or a watering can or something of that nature. Pull all the mulch back. Get rid of all the leaves that have fallen. Pull all the mulch back where your bare ground is exposed. Maybe even get rid of that mulch that's directly under these affected plants. But then use this neem oil drench. It's basically soaking the ground and letting the roots take the neem oil up. And maybe repeating that process every few weeks. So what do you think about that approach?
I have a better solution.
What's that?
Use same idea, but I would use the fungicide chlorothalonil.
All right.
C-H-L-O-R-O-T-H-A-L-O-N-I-L. I think that's correct. C-H-L-O-R-O-T-H-A-L-O-N-I-L. Chlorothalonil.
You win the game.
Well, you know, one thing about Google is if you
get close,
generally autocorrect.
So
it'll probably find.
It is one of the most broad spectrum fungicides that there is. In fact, it's part of what I use in my spray program on tomato plants. And it is very effective in a drench format, like you're talking. Basically, ever how wide the drip line on the tree of the shrubs is, that's where your roots are going to be, drench the whole area. And yes, you're probably a good idea to get rid of the mulch. Everything you said is good. I just think this is a much better solution than the neem oil is. The neem oil sometimes is okay actually on the leaves, but I have better success with neem oil when I'm trying to kill sucking insects that are causing the damage, and not as much more as I'm dealing with a fungal problem. And it sounds like what you have is a fungal problem.
Yeah.
And it won't hurt, like, for instance, the azaleas. I assume they're not very tall. I pour it right over them. Let it get on the leaves.
Drench.
Yeah. Like, mix it up in sometimes I mix it up in 2 gallon water cans when I'm doing it, and just pour it right over the plant and let it soak into the ground good.
Where can he find that?
You're going to probably have to go to somewhere that's a turf supplier. I don't know.
You can get it on Amazon.
Green Resources would sell it.
I'd rather get it locally.
Your Site One locations would have it. You can buy it it was originally sold as Daconil, but chlorothalonil is the actual chemical, and you can buy it now in the generic, and it's cheaper than what the Daconil. Sometimes you see like a quart of Daconil for sale in the box stores, but it's outrageously expensive compared to if you went and bought a gallon or something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
Maybe, sounds like maybe, that's the answer.
Maybe Tractor Supply?
Maybe.
We'll look.
I would check.
Green Resources has good stuff.
There's plenty of places in the area that would carry it, and there's lots of other things you can use. If I know I'm having an issue and I'm not 100% certain what it is, it's the first fungicide I try. Now, there are things in certain plants where there might be another fungicide that works a little bit better, but that's why I call it a broad spectrum. It works on a lot of different things and would be a good place to start. Is where your new house at, did that used to be farmland?
Supposedly, yes. Supposedly, it was a cow pasture.
Uh-huh.
And I thought it would be just wonderful soil, you know, because for 200 years, the cows had, you know what, ended all over
that's
the
right.
ground. Well, I was sorely disappointed, shall we say. Disappointed.
And,
anyway,
and you don't.
It's just old clay, and the builder didn't do a very good job of getting out the excess gravel they bring in when they start building these things.
I suspect that the grading probably did you in. And not keeping all of what had been improved from the cows over time there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you run into it sometimes now in these new subdivisions. Another thing that can cause black spot, too, is poor drainage.
Mm-hmm.
So did you, most all these things you're telling me you planted or the builder planted?
No, the magnolia, the azaleas were done by the by the builder, but you know, his professional landscaping company. The other ones, the tea olives, the viburnums. We had someone professionally plant them for us. I mean,
Did you see the hole when it was done? What I'm saying is, have you dug down to see? Lord, am I in pure red clay here, or so? What does the soil look like? Because that could tell you if the soil is not draining well. Things that you plant in the future, you're going to have to dig a way bigger hole and either add permateal or something like that will improve the drainage.
I will tell you the young lady who did the work for us, the planting of it came. You know, she was referred to us by Campbell Road. They don't refer people who
crackheads.
Right.
Exactly. So I'm good with all that. Thanks. Let me get to this drip system real quick because I know you got to get to the farmer's market, folks. And I always want to hear about what's happening at the farmer's market anyway. So here's the deal. I found, again, look at the video, great looking, fairly easy in the scheme of things, drip installation system. I will run around the perimeter of the house so my poor sweet wife doesn't have to spend hours on hours in 95-degree weather out there watering the plants this summer like she did last year. Anyway, here's the deal. So let's just take a plant that's located in the bed next to the house. I'm going to run my main line, you know, up behind the plant line, you know, if you will, my main drip line. And then I'm going to have fingers coming off of it periodically. So let's take a plant like a hydrangea, and it's sitting there kind of by itself. Is it smart to just have just the main drip line coming off the spigot, or should I try to run a couple of fingers, if you will, down by the side of that plant? I'm not talking about totally boxing it in because it's on a little bit of a slope, but you know, it's just kind of making sure the sides are getting watered. And it's not just water coming into the back of the ears.
If
of the
it's
plant.
Coming
does that,
in
does that
one
have merit way, to it?
No, you don't need to wrap it all the way around it. I mean, if you've got water that's going to get to within the drip line of the root system, I don't know how tall the hydrangea is or how wide it is, but you just say it was 2 foot by 2 foot, and you had the drip line within 2 foot or 20 inches of the plant, on one, that's going to be sufficient because the plant will pull it. There's no need for you to go all the way around it. Now, sometimes if you were planting it brand new and you were planting it in June because the house was built and they were wanting to sell it, then you might would wrap it around it because it's going to be a miracle to keep it alive to start with.
Right.
But something that's already got through a summer or season, If you've got it, I don't think that's really important, and you can't hardly put too much water to hydrangea.
That's true. And again, I wasn't going to completely enclose it. I was just going to go down two sides, you know, not box it in. But you're saying that's probably even.
I don't think now if the main line was 4 foot from it or 5 foot from it, then yes, you probably need to get a line, get the water over a little closer to it.
No, this particular system uses a flexible a flexible irrigation tape rather than a tube type thing. I really liked what I saw on this one, and so it'll be some effort to get it in, but you know it'll be worth it in the long run. I think it'll use a lot less water, keep the plants happy.
And keep mama happy.
It'll keep mama happy. There we go. That's what it's all about, right?
I understand.
Anyway, hey, guys, I'll let you go. Thank you so much. Love your show. And always enjoy listening with you in person when we get a chance to.
Yeah, you know, we'll be in Fuquay the first weekend in March.
we already missed the Fuquay.
First weekend in May. First weekend in May. We'll be at Rescue Wood Rehab.
They're
on Main Street. Not far from Broad Street, North Main Street.
We'll probably stop by and say hello.
Yeah, please do.
Always see it Campbell Road, or always see it, you know, like maybe a farmer's market or whatever.
Right.
And so we'll see you around.
Thank you.
Guys.
Bye.
Appreciate you taking the call.
All right. Thank you. Do we need to take a break, Joel? Billy's on the line. Billy, we'll just call you back during the news so you don't get cauliflower ear. And rest a minute, and we'll talk with you after the news here on WPTF. Go out to the State Farmers Market and Brother Billy here on WPTF.